puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, I am thrilled to be back from my break in Chicago, to be back talking to Gordon Goldsboro about Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning.
Good morning, Terry.
Now, I missed your clue last week with Laurie. What was it?
Well, I said that in order to visit this week's historic site, you would need a passport.
Why? Is there a part of Manitoba that we don't know about that's in another country?
This site, although it is not in Manitoba, has a great relevance to Manitoba.
So what are you talking about?
I'm talking about a place called Fort Daer in North Dakota.
You know, it's funny. I drove past that as we were coming back, saw the sign for a historic site,
right.
Fort Daer.
That's right. Not Daer as in a challenge,
yeah.
But Daer, Daer, who is actually the oldest son of Lord Selkirk. And, of course, Lord Selkirk figures very prominently in Manitoba's history.
So why is this? This is in North Dakota, not that far south of the border.
That's right. Yeah. Now, the reality, though, is people sometimes think that Manitoba's history began in 1870 when it became a province. The reality, of course, it goes back way further than that. Of course, you could imagine the indigenous history. If you think of the European period, you know, when agriculture really began here in Manitoba, that begins around 1812. And that was when Lord Selkirk brought his first cohort of settlers
here. I've met some of the descendants of those people.
Oh, yeah. They're all over the place,
aren't
of course.
They? Yeah.
What people may not realize, though, is that when Lord Selkirk brought them here, he had been given a land grant. Lord Selkirk was an investor in the Hudson's Bay Company, and he was given a great big tract of land. It was 116,000 square miles, a huge area, and it extended into what we now think of as North Dakota, Minnesota, a little bit of Ontario, a little bit of Saskatchewan, and a big chunk of southern Manitoba. So the reality was his land grant included what we now think of as the United States or part of the United States.
Now, we pulled up on the computer here in the studio some representation from your website about Fort Daer. What will people see if they go to the website?
Well, okay. So they will come upon a sketch, basically, that was done in 1822. So in other words, that's basically 10 years after the settlers arrived. There was a young fellow, actually a 16-year-old boy by the name of Peter Rindesbacher, and his parents had come to the Red River settlement to live. And he was such a talented artist that the Hudson's Bay Company put him to work doing all kinds of sketches of various things. So he went south from the Red River settlement to the junction of the Pembina River where it meets the Red River. And he's on the east bank looking west. And the sketch that he's got shows on the south side of the Pembina River, Fort Daer, and on the north side is Fort Pembina. Now, keep in mind, this was 1812. This was before the big fur trade amalgamations that resulted in today's Hudson's Bay Company. Back then, there was the Hudson's Bay Company and the Northwest Company. Northwesters were on the north side of the river, the Hudson's Bay Company on the south.
Was it before the drawing of the 49th parallel as our boundary?
Indeed, it was. Because, of course, the other significance of the year 1812, it wasn't just the year that the Selkirk settlers arrived. It was the year of the big conflict. The War of 1812 between, of course, Great Britain or Canada and the United States. Well, ultimately, that battle was resolved. There was a treaty that was signed in 1818, 6 years later. And that treaty basically prescribed the border between Canada and the United States, defined it as being the 49th line of latitude when you go west of Lake of the Woods. Well, if you draw that line, what you find, in fact, is that quite a bit of Lord Selkirk's land is no longer in Canada. It's in now this newly defined segment, the United States. So Fort Daer became American territory, and they eventually closed it.
I didn't pull off the highway to see it. What's there now?
Well, as you can imagine, a fur trade post from the 1812s would not persist this long. In fact, they abandoned it in 1822. So it's been almost 200 years since this fort existed. So there's nothing left of the actual fort itself. We say we know what it kind of looks like based on this wonderful sketch by this Peter Rindesbacher. But otherwise, there's nothing physical of the fort itself. But because it is a state park, it was designated a state park quite a number of years ago, there is sort of a green space there. And back in 1948, a group known as the Pembina County Pioneer Daughters, I guess they recognized its historic significance, and they put up a monument that is still there today.
Are there any other things named for the Selkirk world in North Dakota?
I don't know in North Dakota, but of course, if you just go across the border into Manitoba, there are loads of things that are named for Lord Selkirk and his various connections.
Mm. And so Dare was his what? His oldest son?
It was named for his son, his oldest son, Dunbar James Douglas, but he was otherwise known as Lord Dare.
Wow. What a great story.
Well, yeah, it's significant to the history of Manitoba, of course, because without Fort Dare, I should probably mention the reason why it's so significant to our history. It isn't just a fur trade post of some kind. When those settlers first arrived, they arrived very late in the fall, too late, in fact, to set up an establishment here in Winnipeg, too late to plant crops. So they felt that because there was going to be a shortage of food, they thought it would be better to head south and meet up with the there was a Métis encampment there, because of course that was the edge of the plains. A lot of the Métis bison hunters would go out into the plains. So they thought, well, they could spend the winter there. So those Selkirk settlers went and spent their very first winter at Fort Dare, what is the site of Fort Dare. They then came back here to Winnipeg, or what would become Winnipeg, the following spring. But then the following fall, it was again, they weren't sure they would really spend the winter here. So they went back to Fort Dare again. So they spent no fewer than three winters successively at Fort Dare. So you could argue that were it not for Fort Dare, the Selkirk settlement would not have survived. And without that survival, this city we have today would not exist.
So, and if it hadn't been for the indigenous people, both helping at Fort Dare, but also Chief Pegg was helping.
Absolutely. Well, of course, the bison hunters themselves that would provide provisions to them. You know, so that's why I think this is such an important site to Manitoba, even though it's not today part of Manitoba.
Great story, Gordon. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, before you go.
Yes.
Next week.
Oh, okay. Well, next week's site, well, I have to say this, drugs figure prominently in the story.
Drugs.
Drugs.
Okay. Drugs. Okay. Thank you, Gordon. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.